John Carroll Lynch here. Hello! I'm here. American Horror Story has been a big part of my life and a big part of my work, and it's been a joy to be on that show for a lot of different reasons. I just have one little tiny piece of advice, which is don't go out there.
They've conquered the big screen. Now, get ready for the spin-off sure to send chills down your spine. It's Nico, Brian, Mike, and Dustin in Don't Go Out There, the series.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Don't Go Out There podcast. Just want to thank all our fans and listeners. Really appreciate the support. You guys are awesome. Before we get into tonight's review, just want to give a quick shout out to our website, don'tgooutthere.com. Everything about our podcast is on the website. All of our episodes and interviews, if you want to check those out. We've done some incredible interviews in the past. Go check them out there in a specific tab by themselves so you don't have to scroll through hundreds of episodes on Apple or Spotify, etc. We also have our store if you want to grab a shirt, a mouse pad, a hat, all that good stuff. We'd love to see your pictures, you know, rep your favorite podcast. And Chan's Etsy page is also attached if you want to grab a Tumblr. All of our social media links are on there as well. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok. Like us, subscribe us, follow us, all that good stuff. And the last thing I want to shout out on our website is our Patreon. We call it Blood Donors. We have the traditional monthly reoccurring kind. If you want to support us, help us pay the bills, as we say. Or if there's a movie you want us to review, that option is available as well. Just check out our website, don'tgooutthere.com. Also, if you haven't noticed, we've recently joined the Believe Network. So there's some ads on our program now. But if you want ad-free content, go check us out on Blood Donors. The ad-free episodes will be available there. We appreciate your support. We hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome back, everybody, to DGOT, the series. We really appreciate y'all listening. We hope y'all have been enjoying these series reviews. I know we have. It's been a lot of fun. We're going to keep on continuing with American Horror Story 1984, episodes 3 and 4 tonight. I'll just get us started off with my general thoughts. I still had fun with them. I still think they're a good time. I'm having fun. Even though, like I mentioned in the previous episode, that I had seen this season, I've said this in the past, but I just don't retain the information from like series episodes like I do movies for some reason. I don't know why. So it feels like I'm kind of getting like a fresh watch again, even though I've already seen it, if that makes any kind of sense at all. But 3 and 4, I had fun with it. Brian, you want to go next with just general thoughts?
Yeah, short and sweet. And I don't know about you, Dustin, but I've still only seen these 4 episodes. I didn't go past these yet. So I'm doing good. I'm not jumping ahead. I will admit that I do like these 2 episodes a lot better than I did the opening 2. More specifically, episode 4, I think, as 3 was pretty much just flashbacks most of the time. So,
yeah, I haven't watched ahead either. And it was parts of. So I said that I'd seen a couple episodes of this series. Turns out I think I've only seen bits and pieces of individual episodes. I don't think I've actually seen a full episode before we're reviewing this.
Damn.
But episode 3 was. It wasn't my favorite of the first 3. It was my least favorite. Episode 4, Jump Ahead, was my favorite of the first 4. So this is going to be a mixed bag.
For sure, for sure. And I'm doing the scene by scene tonight. So anybody got anything before we get on started with episode 3? All right, episode 3, Slash Dance, directed by Mary Wigmore. We pick up immediately where we left off in episode 2 as the Night Stalker has Brooke, Chet, Rita, and Ray cornered in the nurse's cabin. Ramirez finally realizes it's easier to go through a fucking window than sitting there beating on the door like a lunatic. And Ray says, fuck all y'all, it's survival of the fittest here, and tries to leave, but is cut off by the Night Stalker, who has somehow suddenly gotten the strength to knock down the door. And he just starts cutting the shit out of Ray's arms instead of stabbing him. Chet checks him into the wall and saves pussy-ass Ray. We switch to Montana, X, and Trevor in another cabin being attacked by who we think is Mr. Jingles, but turns out to be some jackasses in masks who has Trevor step on a flaming bag of shit a la Billy Madison. He called the shit poop. The real Jingles pops up, gotcha bitch, and kills the kids dressed up, cutting off their ears as well. And this takes us into that badass opening credit sequence. When we come back, Ray, Chet, Rita, and Brooke are running through the woods when Chet and Ray fall into a pit of spikes. We cut back to Jingles finding another kid dressed up, but takes pity on him and lets him go. Back at the Mortal Kombat Rambo Pit of Spikes, we find Chet has been severely wounded by one of the spikes. Brooke and Rita manage to escape to the parking lot. However, Rita knocks Brooke unconscious, stabbing her in the neck with what she thinks is a horse tranquilizer, revealing Rita to not be who she says she is. We get a flashback showing that Nurse Rita is really Donna Chambers, a psychologist obsessed with serial killers, meeting with Dr. Hopple, trying to get on board at the hospital. After some convincing, she gets to meet with Jingles, and we end the set of scenes with her entering his room.
All right, I thought the opening was intense, and it's actually a scary thought, honestly, having the Night Stalker trying to break down the door to your cabin. But this really wasn't the killer's modus operandi, if anyone actually cares about that. Ray, he cracks me up with the "there are four of us," but still sticks with the outrunning plan instead of just teaming up and just jumping the Night Stalker, which is actually how he was caught. Chet with an elite slam against the wall to the Night Stalker. I know Dustin at least appreciated that, the big wrestling fan he is, saving Ray. I know me and Brian are wrestling fans as well, but not like Dustin. He still watches to this day. I got a chuckle out of the bag of flaming shit thrown into the cabin to scare the other trio of friends because it's such a tense moment for the trio. But then they're like, are you kidding me? You kidding me right now? Great kill from Jingles to start us off, but zero will to live with the second prankster. What the hell is up with all these people's lack of will to live recently? It's getting on my damn nerves, honestly. Then I wrote shit with two exclamation marks because I was very serious about that shit. Punji sticks, one of the most horrific war traps. I feel for my guy Chet. I know that hurt like crazy. That's a nightmare. This third Jingles lookalike scene, it has to be a Halloween resurrection nod to Busta Rhymes, right? It seemed just too on the nose to me. Then I was like, well, shit, Rita. I liked you until you ambushed my girl Brooke. But I'm curious to where this is going next. Go ahead, Dustin.
Yeah, I like that we pick back up immediately with Richard Ramirez trying to get into the cabin. No wasted seconds getting back to where we last saw everyone. Ray cracked my ass up when he was like, fuck y'all, I'm getting out. Like that, he was a pussy, but that was kind of funny. The Jingles impersonators, they cracked me up as well when he went Billy Madison and threw the flaming bag of shit through the window. Don't put it out with your boots, Ted. solid action-packed open before the opening credits even hit, so very well done there. Then a big what the fuck moment when Nurse Rita drugged Brooke. Did not see that coming. Then we hear her name isn't even Rita. Like the plot thickens. So I'm invested.
Nico's Vietnamese people started those damn pit spikes. All right. Short and sweet here. Second set of scenes. Back in the first meeting with Chambers and Jingles, she's able to get him to speak almost immediately after turning off the recorder and trying to convince him that perhaps it's not his fault after all. Chambers is then revealed to have assisted him in an escape from the hospital, knowing a surprising amount of behind-the-scenes stuff about the hospital switches, etc., very quickly, I might add. Donna is then shown abducting the real Rita on her way to the camp, stealing her car and identity. Good thing for Chambers that Margaret and Rita had never met each other before, because that seems risky, but whatever. We flash to the pit where Chet appears to be passed out from the pain. This somehow convinces Ray that now is a great time to confess a secret of his own, and we flash back to last year in Ray's frat house, Omega's Eye. More specifically, a frat pledge named Chan. The pledge gets too drunk and accidentally falls down the stairs, but then Ray makes the genius decision to make it look like a car accident. But just before going off the cliff, Nico grabs Ray's arm and watch, but by this time it's too late and the pledge goes over the cliff. No explosion, no flip into the car. The dude's probably still alive, but Ray runs off anyway, and the next set of scenes is the ending.
Nico, did you get Love Lies Bleeding vibes with the car going off the cliff? I did.
Yeah. Oh, just to stress something that I said at the end of Final Destination, I'm from Kentucky. but I want to ask our listeners, if anybody listens to this, I don't even know if you do or not. If you only heard my voice, would you guess I'm Asian? Please comment on the next social media post you see. All right, anywho, back to the review. Angelica Ross is killing this scene, no pun intended, dishing all the tea on all the killers she's spoken to. And side note, I know all my true crime fans I'm talking about, but if you're not as well-versed, William Bonin is one of the most horrific people in the true crime genre that's not near as known as the more well-known serial killers. He's a horrific person. Jingles is preaching with the high fructose corn syrup line. I am a part of the movement that believes the food we are eating these days play a huge factor in our mental health. Even though I do believe that, I ate fast food twice a day. So I guess I'm just a hypocrite. Anywho, I enjoy the conversation between Dr. Rita and Jingles, but it's hard for me to believe that no officers are listening in on this. Kind of hard to buy that one. Rita says, be yourself. Trust your instincts. What is Jingles doing? Going on a first date or breaking out of a hospital? I love the fact the nurse's name on IMDb is Real Rita. I got a crack out of me. It cracked me up. You can tell Real Rita has never seen the movie Urban Legend. You always check your backseat before getting in the car when you're a little freaked out.
Plus, it's not like that was a big car. How did she hide in the backseat?
Right, in broad daylight. It's not raining or anything. Mom was too big, pissed down her leg. I like Rita's reveal to Brooke she's not actually a nurse. Very menacing look as she's smoking her cigarette. These people love ripping some cigs on this show. I immediately hate Ray once he antagonizes my Asian brother at the frat house. But, all right, I take it back. He's trying to help him out and encourage him, but damn it, man, my guy Chan rolls down the stairs and almost dies. Shake my head. Racist program we got going on here. Then I just continued hating on Ray, calling him a piece of shit, pushing a still alive Chan off the cliff in the car. I'm disgusted.
This is the least amount of notes that I have, I'm pretty sure, ever. But porn and high fructose corn syrup, that's what makes people kill. Got it. I don't know about the whole no one is irredeemable thing. This lady may be just that. She's the reason Jingles is back in action. She kidnapped the real nurse Rita. She drugged Brooke. She's evil. If, you know, the worst thing she did was drugging Brooke. Anyway, Ray's whole backstory. Listen, it's interesting and all, but I just don't care about it here. Like, I get it sets up why he's such a piece of shit and left Chet in the pit of death there, but it was so forced and fast. It's like we didn't have time to really even stew on it before, you know, Ray's out of the picture. So I don't know. It didn't come back to play in a big enough way for me. But like I said, it was interesting. It was well shot and everything. Yeah, that's all I got.
All right, this is the ending of episode 3. Back in the pit of doom, Ray reveals he is at Camp Redwood running from a conviction, and Chet reveals himself to not be unconscious and have heard the whole damn thing. This sets Ray off again, who now leaves Chet a second time to die. Back with Montana, Xavier, and Trevor, the three escape into a nearby shed after spotting the real Jingles and find the real nurse Rita alive and bound as well. They untie her, but she's frightened and crawls right into the path of Jingles himself, who shoves a broken boat oar through her skull. They run into Ray, who lies about Chet. Trevor gives Ray the keys to his motorcycle, sending him and Montana to call for help at the call box on his ninja. Xavier and Trevor find Chet in the hole, and X lowers down, freeing Chet. They manage to get Chet out of the hole, watching Jingles looking momentarily exposed as he peers into the hole. Trevor takes this chance to ram him into the spikes. They soon find out it's only one of the cosplayers, the one that Jingles let live earlier, and not the real Richter. Back at the parking lot, Ramirez appears and ambushes Montana and Ray. Ray bails on his friends for the third time, but this time gets his due as Jingles knocks Ray's head off with a swing that would make Mike Trout proud. We cut back to the parking lot, and we see Montana and Ramirez making out as the episode ends with a shocking Montana asking, why the hell haven't you killed her yet? What you think?
Nico, Mike Trout's a baseball player. Yeah, I know. All right, anywho.
I am not going to tell you I deleted that out of my notes because I had enough respect for you.
Yeah, you just call me every single version of Asian, but here we are. All right, anywho, I started off my notes this set of scenes with more passionate thoughts on Ray. Fuck Ray. I'm glad you got a shit job after killing my kinfolk. How about that? Now he leaves Chet to die? Fuck
Ray. Now he's your kinfolk? Now he's your kinfolk?
He's my Asian brother. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Hey, I'm allowed to say that, not you, brother. All right. Real Rita, I feel zero sympathy for her. Shut the hell up, lady. I know you're scared, but you got to be quiet right now. They're here to help you. But it is a great kill. The oar through her mouth looked great. I shouldn't laugh at the three just staring at her with the oar out of her mouth. It gave me a chuckle. I thought it was hilarious. Small detail, but I really like this electronic synth music playing while Jingles follows Chet screams. I think that was a really nice touch. Xavier is starting to redeem himself in my eyes as he helps Chet in this punji stick pit. Chet, I know you're in a lot of pain right now, but you, my friend, you need to shut the hell up too, bucko. Trevor drops a hilarious line about his guns and then tackles the fuck out of Imposter Jingles into the pit. That would have made Ray Lewis proud. That's a football player, Dustin. I'm not even mad at Ray for I'm not even mad at Ray for driving off here. Montana wanted to investigate when she should have just split. Like, get the hell out of this place. Another nice callback to an 80s slasher, Friday the 13th Part 3, with this decapitation while someone rides away on a motorbike. I really like that touch as well. And the episode ends with a nice WTF ending. Montana kissing Ramirez, asking why he hasn't killed her yet. I like it.
Yeah, so we find out why Ray is here at the camp. He's running, but still. Just taking a job as a counselor doesn't need a backstory like that. There doesn't have to be motivation for him to take this job. But I guess it does set up the believability factor, like I said, when he left Chet in the pit. I'm not really a fan of the whole scene here with the real nurse Rita. Like, she just happened to be tied up where they were hiding. I don't know. A little too convenient just to have someone get killed on screen. Although it was a badass kill, and it allowed Xavier, Trevor, and Montana to find out the whole Rita twist, so I guess it worked. I laughed when Xavier said, "If I kill you, I'm so sorry." Great line. Like, I don't know. That made me laugh. But it didn't make me laugh as much as Trevor saying, "His knife versus my guns." That guy's awesome. And finding out he killed one of Jingle's impersonators, like, that's hilarious too. I don't know why. RIP to that kid, but I laughed. Ray fucking sucked as a character, man. Glad he died, and I'm glad we got such an awesome kill for him. And then, yeah, you said it, Nico. What a damn cliffhanger to end on. Montana's in cahoots with the Night Stalker? Hell yeah. Whole episode saved in the final moments.
Yeah, and you keep talking about real Rita. Like, how long was she in there tied up? It'd been days, right? Like, or I mean, shit, for a long-ass time.
Yeah. That's why I'm like, yeah.
Anybody got any fun facts on this episode?
I got one.
Go ahead.
Dreama Walker, the real Rita, was incredibly excited to be cast on the show and didn't know her character was going to die so soon. She only found out when she arrived at the special effects studio to get her head cast for her death scene. So that's got to be a bummer.
Poor real Rita. Crazy.
Yeah. Honestly, I didn't love this episode. Felt like a lot of unnecessary filler, but the twist, especially the one at the end, saved it. So if you're keeping track of my scoring, I gave this one a 7.5. Would have been lower had it not been. Ooh, that's a good question. Play the hold music. IMDb gave this one a 7.9.
Okay.
Which is actually higher than episode 2, which I don't know. I don't agree with that, but that's just me.
Maybe it's the ending. The ending sucked.
What did you rate it, Dustin?
7.5.
It doesn't matter what you rated it.
That's the Rock, Nico.
It'll matter at the end when the score's 8.45365 Niner.
Exactly.
You said Niner because you're a 49ers fan. Go ahead.
Maybe.
Niner, were you calling from a walkie-talkie? That's from Tommy Boy, Nico.
I've seen Tommy Boy.
All right, people are going to turn us off. All right, episode 4, True Killers, by director Jennifer Lynch. We open up with a title card letting us know that this is a flashback. And coked out Montana, look, there's not many cool people, but coked out Montana is fucking awesome. Is teaching aerobics in an all-male class. We see Ramirez make his way into the class as well. And when approached by Montana and called Rambo, they both hit it off when they're interrupted by a dude named Rod in the class who wants to listen to Cyndi Lauper, who Montana promptly kicks out of his class. By the way, is anybody named Rod? Like, I mean, come on. Besides Rod Lane, even he was a douchebag. I don't know.
So funny thing about the name Rod, my best friend Shane, when we go sing karaoke, sometimes he'll do It Wasn't Me by Shaggy. And then when he's got some instrumentals playing, he'll, in a Jamaican accent, say, "They call me Rodney. You know why? Because me rod hangs down to me knee." So.
Oh, my God. After the class in the locker room, Montana finds Rod hanging from the ceiling. Ramirez reveals himself to be the killer, and she promptly slaps him and then fucks him on the locker room floor. During some pillow talk, she enlists him to murder Brooke as revenge for the death of Montana's brother at Brooke's wedding, and we hit that kick-ass opening credits. And, sidebar, I've watched that damn thing every single episode, and I never do that.
Yeah,
I
did no skips.
Back in the present, Montana and Ramirez finalize their plan as we cut to Xavier, Trevor, and Chet back in another cabin as Chet passes out after putting a bandage to his wound. Xavier's dumbass thinks he's immediately dead, but Trevor uses epinephrine to jolt his heart and get him back up and going, but let him stay in the bed as they agree that X is to get Birdie and Trevor is to get Margaret. Trevor finds her, but Margaret isn't going anywhere. Meanwhile, Birdie is making some sandwiches with a side of cigarette ashes, apparently, as X busts through and tells her everyone is being slaughtered like dogs, and that's where this group of scene ends.
All right. Anytime we get an 80s jazzercise scene, I'm not going to be upset. The vibes are immaculate, I tell you. I wish I could have lived through those times. I'm sure Brian can tell me how they were. He was like, what, 30, 37 in the 80s? Wow. Just kidding, brother. Wow. I'm just kidding. The thought of the Night Stalker doing an aerobics class, though, is hilarious to me. Like, it cracks me up thinking about it. And damn, Richard, killing someone over some banter and Billy Idol is crazy. But then again, America is even worse off now. They'll kill you if you don't retweet them fast enough or something. Quentin Tarantino, I know, is super jealous of Ramirez as he licks on Montana's feet. I know he's fuming. Nice reveal that Montana and Brooke's ex-fiance's best man was her brother. I like that. I like how Ramirez is fascinated with another killer being around. Another inspiration, if you will. And I laughed at Trevor and Chet simultaneous. What? When Xavier admits he made porn. Like you mentioned, Brian, Trevor going to help Margaret. I don't blame him for leaving her. He tried his best to help her. If you don't want this help, I got to get the hell out of here. And then Stevie Nicks playing goes crazy at the end of this set of scenes. I know, Dustin, you've seen Coven. Stevie Nicks is in that season, so I think that's really cool that she continues to be a part of the series, even if it's just her music playing.
Great season, too. So I like that we addressed the biggest oh shit moment from the last episode, possibly the whole series, in the open here. How the hell did Montana and Richard Ramirez get together? Well, here's how. So I like that. But I do find it hard to believe that Montana is the sister of Brooke's fiance's best man. I think they definitely would have known each other, or at least known about each other, if they were as close as Brooke said, you know, her and the guy that she was accused of sleeping with. I just think that that's a little unbelievable. I fucking love Trevor's character, man. The look on his face when Xavier says that he knows what he's doing and then saying the epinephrine isn't going to make Chet worse. Good point. You can't get any deader. And then when he stabbed him with the epinephrine, though, I immediately thought of Get Him to the Greek when Jonah Hill's character gets a shot of adrenaline to the heart and he just sits up. I'm alive. That's a good movie, Dico. And then I laughed again when he handed Chet a fucking pair of medical scissors to defend himself against Jingles and Richard Ramirez. Like, that's funny. Margaret's character pisses me off so much, man. At least here. No one would be that dense. But overall, not a bad open. I actually enjoyed it a lot.
Mr. Jingles walks in on Birdie, who momentarily convinces him to sit down and eat a PB&J. But when he hears Xavier underneath the table, shit pops off and Jingles stabs the shit out of Bernie and throws Xavier's ass in the oven. That happened. Honestly, don't think that oven as hot as Florida though is right now in the summer. Can't be. But we cut to Brooke, who wakes up and finds herself in a storage shed of some kind. She busts through the door and avoids an Indiana Jones-esque trap before being snagged by a second one as she is trapped once again in a net hanging 20 yards in the air. Donna finds her and confesses to being the one who set these traps, which doesn't really make any sense. I mean, it made more sense when we thought the former GI with jungle training in Vietnam was the one who set the traps, but well, here we are. We then flash to Xavier being cooked alive as Birdie saves him with her last bit of strength before asking Xavier to mercy kill her with a butcher knife, to which he obliges after just one please from the chef. Back to the woods, Montana tracks down Brooke, who plays helpless, as we also then cut to Margaret, who is having a flashback of her time at camp as well. And it turns out Benjamin isn't quite who we thought he was. As we're shown Margaret enlisting his help with some bullies we recognize from episode 1 Massacre as being dead as fuck later. We are then shown Montana telling Ramirez where Brooke is, and after being asked to stay put, saying there's no fucking way that she's not watching her die. Go ahead.
All right, I say this with the utmost respect, but just looking at Birdie, I guarantee she makes a fire peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Take that with what you will. Jingles takes a meat tenderizer hammer right to the back of the head, no problem. Sorry, not buying that one. I know the man's our villain of the show, but he's just a regular guy. Kind of hard for me to believe. poor Xavier getting broiled alive. That is torture and a horrific way to be murdered.
The worst.
Again, I stress, no offense at all, but are y'all really buying Emma Roberts being able to break down a door with her shoulder?
Yes. I'm not. She can do anything. She can anything.
No.
She can do anything.
She's a tiny person, though. It's hard for me to buy it. She is a goddess. I'll give you that. And honestly, I get why she wishes she stayed in the damn shed after running all these damn booby traps. Goodness gracious, Jingle's got this place set up. Incredible effects on Xavier's cooked flesh and Birdie's battered face. AHS, great job with the effects. Margaret, I gotta admit, I think she looks adorable with her hair and pigtails. Whew. She's also gross, though, licking and kissing Jingle's cut and blood. What the hell's wrong with this lady? I ended my thoughts on this. Zach Villa, get your money, brother. But there ain't no way I could be chanting Satan's name with a blood ritual. It just goes against my beliefs, bro. I'd be too scared of the aftermath of that.
But you'll watch the Paranormal Activity movies. Oh, that's a shameful. Shameful. With all
but I'm not chanting Satan's name with blood. Yeah, it's different. It's different. Well, why don't you go spill some blood, brother?
So I like Birdie trying to charm Jingles and act like she's not afraid. And I like the depth that's added here with why she came back and Margaret's still living in it. I like that whole scene. Jingles putting Xavier in the oven is brutal. I know it smelled crazy in there. Brooke's first attempt to break down the door was so cute. It's like she barely hit it. She's adorable. And of course, she ran into a crazy ass booby trap. I'm glad that Birdie was able to free Xavier. But I mean, serious question. Would you even want to live after that? He's going to be in pain for weeks after this. And even after that, he'll be scarred to shit. I think I'd have just stayed in the oven. Maybe that's just me. Damn good acting by Montana. And I mean Montana, not Billy Lord. Of course she does well, but Montana, the character, she saw Brooke and got right back into character and convinced her that she was going to get help or she was going to help. Like, that's some good shit from Montana there. Then Margaret is a freak, sucking Jingle's blood when he cut his finger. The hell? I do like the added wrinkle of their dynamic though. Like, this shows that this episode has more layers than a parfait.
Hey, you said last set of scenes that Brooke allegedly slept with her husband's best man. What you mean by that? What you mean by allegedly? Is that
he said that she slept with his best man, and Brooke said no, she didn't. So that's why I said allegedly.
I didn't hear the Brooke saying no, she didn't. I assumed she did the whole time.
Oh no, she told Montana right before Montana kissed her. Like, anytime a girl tells me I was accused of cheating, but I didn't. That's my cue to go in for kiss. So I feel Montana.
Jesus. All right, fellas, this is the ending.
How did I remember that? Anyone else? I'm just fucking mind blown that I just remembered all that.
Yeah, and I just believed you. Like, you didn't just make it up on the spot, too. Well, so I don't know what's wrong with me. What's wrong with me, too? Ramirez emerges from the woods and tells Brooke she's as slippery as a handful of water. At that moment, Richter appears and the two face off for the first time. Jingles makes pretty light work of the Night Stalker, seemingly killing him in the process by slamming him into a protruding branch. Meanwhile, Brooke manages to escape, and Montana and Donna face off in the trenches as well, with Montana getting the upper hand of that bout. Benjamin finds Margaret, who reveals that she was actually the killer in 1970. Bum, bum, bum. And set him to take the fall 14 years ago. The subsequent shock treatments in the asylum apparently had him believe the lie was indeed the way that it went down. And upon realization, he charges her, but is gunned down by Margaret. Trevor arrives after hearing the gunshots, and Margaret kills him too, intending to blame his death on Benjamin, but notices he survived the gunshots and he is gone himself. We cut to the woods, and both injured Xavier and Benjamin face off at the bridge, but neither in any condition to do any battle and let each other go. Brooke finds X and meets up with Chet, Montana, and Margaret at Old Dude's car, which is now on fire. Margaret lies like a motherfucker and says Jingles killed Trevor. Elsewhere, everybody we thought was dead is not, as Donna wakes up and sees Ramirez floating in midair, being healed and revived by supernatural dark power. That's it, Nico. What you think, brother?
All right. I just wrote, Lord have mercy. If I were Brooke, I'd be panicking like crazy. I'm stuck in this trap in the air in this big net, and one of the most prolific serial killers of all time is walking up on me. Yeah, I'm terrified. And I also asked, am I a sicko getting hyped for a serial killer showdown? I think I am. There's a lot going on right now. A girl fight. Brooke is just a swing in, and serial killers are duking it out. Man, there's a lot going on. And holy shit, what a gnarly kill on the Night Stalker. That's way better than what he got in real life. I thought that was a great kill that Jingles did on the Night Stalker. I like the Jingles reveal. He didn't actually do anything prior. Dr. Hopple being evil, not a shock. No pun intended, considering what we see on the screen. And hey, damn, who would have guessed Pigtails Margaret was a camp slasher? This lady, she's slick with it. I'll give her credit. An ear necklace is next level sadistic. My goodness, this lady is fucked up mentally. The firing range automatically makes me think of the OG Friday the 13th. Another nice nod to an 80s slasher. And this bitch kills my guy Trevor now. Come on, Margaret. I like Trevor and his beautiful mustache. More great effects as she cuts Trevor's ear off, though. I'm going to continue to praise AHS with their practical effects, except the guy getting gutted. That was terrible. I'm one of these counselors, I'm starting to suspect Margaret a lot. I'm starting to suspect Margaret a lot. Hey, why don't you learn how to read, Kentucky boy? She seems way too sketchy. And this is where I end my notes. Ramirez is back alive. Well, okay then. Hell of a way to end the episode. I've really enjoyed the first four episodes, to be honest with you.
So we get a Freddy versus Jason style showdown. Hell yes. Here for this. And then we get a cat fight between Fugazi Rita and Montana. Turn it up. Like, I'm all in on this shit. Incredible kill when Jingles finished Ramirez. Fucking gnarly. And then the branch broke. Like, it just looked awesome. Everything about that was incredible. Finding out Margaret is actually the one behind the camp massacre is a great twist. Makes everything up until this point so much better. It makes a lot much more sense. So I like it. Except for Benji. He had his whole life taken from him and then gets shot. Poor fella. With all that's happened in this episode, I really don't see how they stretch this five more episodes, to be honest with you. But I'm invested because, I mean, now we got Ghost running around and, you know, like I said, last set of scenes, more layers than a parfait. But then, I see. Apparently Jingles is a ghost like the hiker. He scared Xavier and then disappeared. And then the Night Stalker comes back to life. Interesting. So the rest of the season is about ghosts and shit. We'll see how it goes. I don't know.
So the Knights, did I miss that too? The fucking Mr. Jingles is a ghost too?
I guess just no, well. He's not.
Spoiler, oh, he's not?
He's not. Mm-mm.
Okay, well, he scared Xavier. Like, I thought he disappeared. Maybe I missed him. I thought he was gone. Gone like a freight train. Gone like yesterday.
Gone like yesterday. Gone like Civil War, bang, bang.
Interesting. Was that Montgomery Gentry?
Yeah, RIP to Troy Gentry.
He died?
Yeah, in a helicopter crash. Oh. Fucking helicopters. Damn. Taking out our great ones. Anywho, back to AHS. yeah, I went ahead and did episodes 5 and 6 notes, so I kind of remembered some stuff that went down. But yeah, okay. Jingles is not a ghost. But it's fun. It's got some good stuff coming up.
Okay. I got some fun facts.
The only one I've got is just, I mean, I saw this one and it bears mentioning, I guess. And Nico kind of touched on it. Like this representation of Richard Ramirez is very loosely based on the real Richard Ramirez. I mean, he didn't die in his 20s. He died in his 50s in a jail cell, I believe. But then again, maybe that's what happened. He was a ghost. So maybe the one that died in the jail cell was his ghost version dying. But the last thing I've got is, you know, this was a lot better than last episode. It's honestly my favorite so far with all the added layers and everything. Like, I would have been fine if they give us 15 more minutes and wrap this whole season up, because I feel like they gave us so much on this one. So I gave it an 8.25.
Yeah. The only thing I mentioned was just my thoughts on, God, went back and listened to episodes 1 and 2. I mean, and a lot makes sense now with things that I had an issue with or else I noticed, like the shot in the campfire of Margaret being in, you know, in her eyes. And I said something about that maybe being foreboding. The nurse not seeming like an actual nurse. That makes a lot of sense now. That's not really a nitpick now. And, I complained about how there was no screaming during the opening murders and how somebody didn't wake somebody else up because, you know, who showed us in the cabin. But all that makes sense now. If that was Marge going around slitting throats and, you know, wasn't piled up like we were led to believe at the beginning. So it's all coming together so far. I like it.
Oh, yeah. I've had a good time rewatching this series. It's fun. You know, I like 80 slashers. It's a good time. Good acting as well. I've become a bigger fan of Emma Roberts as I watched this show. Not that I disliked her, but all I'd seen was Scream 4. So just wasn't real familiar with the game, but she's really good. And she embraces that Scream Queen really well. Y'all got any final thoughts before you get out of here?
Emma Roberts is my favorite Scream killer of everybody.
Dang. She's my favorite person in the entire world.
Wow.
What about Rhea Ripley?
Let's go back and listen to what was a Scream 5 review. And
Anna de Armas.
And Melissa Barrera.
This is subject to change.
And Andy Matichek.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Andy Matichek. I remember that.
This is subject to change.
She was a big part of his life for a while.
That's right. Hey, I feel you, brother. Hey, I feel you. We hope y'all enjoyed these breakdowns. It's been a good time. Thank you to all of our blood donors. I really appreciate y'all. I've been having a good time doing this series show. I hope everyone else has. Y'all tune in next week for episodes 5 and 6. Just want to remind everybody. Midnight hour behind this mirror.